truth in, and it hurts so bad, cause it's all in my head. I think about it over and over again, I replay it over and over again, and I can't take it, yeah. I can't shake it though.
I can't wait to see you, wanna see if you still got that look in your eye, that one you had for me before we said our goodbyes.
Of the 19th Hole Golf Show. It's good to have you here with us. I'm Ryan Ballingy. You can get a hold of me on Twitter at Ryan Ballingy. Get a hold of Golf News Net on your favorite social media service. Oh, don't pick Facebook at the handle Golf News Net. For that matter, don't pick Snapchat. I mean, we really don't post there either. But you can friend us if you want. Anyway, all of our work's on our website, golfnewsnet.com. Download the GNN Radio app for your mobile device to listen to the show a little bit more easily. And you can download our channels for Roku and Amazon Fire TV. I want to tell you a little bit about 2Under. 2Under is one of our new sponsors for this year, and we're absolutely thrilled to have them on board. They are the purveyors of hashtag asset management. If you understand what I'm saying, 2Under makes some of the best golf performance underwear in the world with their famous Joey pouch to keep your assets in a proper position, nice and dry throughout the course of a round. They make sure there's none of that nasty friction that happens as you're walking on the golf course, and the rest of the underwear perform really well so that when you are done, you feel as refreshed getting off the first tee as you do walking into the 19th hole. If you use the promo code GNN20 at checkout, you can save 20% on your entire offer. It does not have to be on underwear. It can be on any of their other performance materials, shirts, other gear, you name it. Go to 2under.com. The number 2UNDR.com, promo code GNN20 at checkout for 20% off. Check them out today. Okay, so I wanted to start with this week's show. To be truthful, I kind of felt a little disjointed about the last podcast, last episode, because we spent like the second half of the show talking about how you get your information about how you get fitted for clubs. And as I was kind of talking, I was like, no one's going to give a crap about any of this, but I'm thinking about it, so I want to talk about it. So we're going to try to avoid a topic that sounds pretty good in my head, but then once I actually start talking about it, and I listen to myself, like, oh, that's horrible. So let's start with something interesting. The Golf Channel strike. So Sunday morning, very interesting development came from the folks at No Laying Up. They're plugged into a couple folks at Golf Channel, whether or not it was someone in upper management, whether it was someone at this union crew, whatever it was. But they got tipped off that there would be a work stoppage for the folks working Golf Channel live tournament coverage, both in the Bahamas on the web.com tour, which ran Saturday through Tuesday for its season opener, and this week goes Sunday to Wednesday. And then obviously, the PGA Tour's final round for the Sony Open in Hawaii at Wailea Country Club in Honolulu, that was there on Sunday later in the day, and that was scheduled to go on at 6 p.m. And they had been told there was going to be the potential for a work stoppage, then quickly realized there had been a work stoppage because when they went on at Golf Channel, I believe at 11 a.m. with their web.com tour coverage, everything was disjointed. It came in at 11 a.m., with graphics for Morning Drive, which had just wrapped up. They opened not with a graphics package like they normally would to introduce you to the web.com tour and kind of set the stage. They didn't go to Steve Burkowski, who's the play-by-play guy, I think, for this year. I'm not sure if it's Grant Boone, again, for any portion of the season. Hope so. I love Grant Boone, but Burko's good too. And Craig Perks. So they go in to the Morning Drive studio, and they have Damon Hack and Paige McKenzie, and they're like, all right, let's show some highlights of like what's happening. And the highlights make no sense. It's early stuff. I mean, it's just kind of silly. It sounds bad. It looks bad. The camera works clearly shoddy. No one has any idea what's going on. All the graphics don't look smooth. The transitions look weird. They're just kind of cut transitions. They're jump cuts. It doesn't work with their aesthetic. It's not how tournament golf is broadcast, at least by Golf Channel. And you quickly get the sense they scrambled to put this together. They go out to the Bahamas, to Sandals, Emerald Bay, where they're having this tournament. And they finally get to Burko, whose mic is not working. They get and Perks is there alongside, so at least Perks is mic work, so they're talking to each other to try to set the stage. And then they go, well, let's go out to the action. And they clearly have cameras on, like, two holes, or they have, like, one overhead camera and one steady cam, you know, one mobile camera that they can bring with them. And it just, it's awful. And it's not good, and you can clearly tell something's up. And then we start to kind of get more information. I started doing a little bit of digging. Obviously, the No Laying Up guys are doing it, too. Everyone else is kind of aware of what's happening. The interesting thing is, I later found this out, people who were at the Sony Open in Hawaii, including the PGA Tour staff, knew this was a possibility on Friday. Knew it was likely, actually, on Friday. They may have known it Thursday, but John Bush is a PGA Tour media official, one of the best, great guy, easy to work with, and he apparently had put on Instagram, in his account, the only thing that he's really worried about is the NBC strike. Well, I guess people hadn't put two and two together, or not enough people saw John's post. I don't follow Instagram very much, so how would I have known? And then talked to someone else who was broadcasting from there, not for Golf Channel, but for SiriusXM, who was there for them. And they said, yeah, we knew Friday that this was going to happen. And it makes sense from a union standpoint. If you want to call a strike, you do it when you can inflict the maximum amount of pain that just cannot be accounted for and can't be quickly mitigated. And by calling for a strike when tournaments are broadcast and the only two, you have two in action and one crew there already for another for PGA Tour Champions debut this week, which was this week, which started yesterday, Hualalai, then you have three crews in exotic locations. You know, you've got the crew in the Bahamas for the PGA Tour or the Web.com Tour event. You've got the crew in Honolulu for the Sony Open in Hawaii. And then you've got this crew that's starting to get together for the PGA Tour Champions opener. And you can't really find many non-union workers very quickly, certainly in those locations. You might be able to find them more quickly somewhere in the States, people who might need an afternoon's worth of work or whatever. They can jump in and be a cameraman and at least be capable of doing a lot of the stuff that you would expect a regular golf cameraman to do. But that really wasn't a choice on Sunday. So you get this really weird coverage of the Web.com tour. And then there was this kind of mystery. Would this problem be solved by 6 p.m.? And if it would be solved by 6 p.m., would that mean the telecast wouldn't look all that different? Well, pretty quickly, those issues were answered by the PGA Tour and Golf Channel to some extent. Golf Channel put out a statement indicating, yes, they were negotiating with this union that represents 350 to 390, depending on who you ask, Golf Channel technicians, audio guys, cable guys, utility guys, camera guys, I mean, a bunch of different people in this union. They acknowledged that there was a strike. And they acknowledge that there has been an ongoing negotiation since June. And they said, you know, we're going to try to do our best. We have a contingency plan. Here we go. We're sorry, but we thank you for your patience. And the PGA Tour said the same thing, not only to the fans in a statement, but also to the players in a private one that was acquired by No Laying Up, which kind of tipped them off to what was happening. And they basically said to their players, expect interruptions in coverage. Expect limited coverage of the web.com and of the PGA Tour final round. And we're there's really not much we can do about this, but this is what's happening. And it's all related to the TV partnership. So then the broadcast, we get to 6 p.m. and there's no resolution, which I kind of figured would happen. If they called the strike, then we're just going to end it in 5 hours. Like they were going to try to hold out and at least go through with the entire thing, because yeah, I'm sure people watch the web.com tour, like 100,000 people maybe. But, 500-some-odd thousand people watched the final round of the Sony Open in Hawaii. Now, probably part of that was the expectation of watching a train derailment, because word spread quickly, at least on golf Twitter, that this was happening, and people probably wanted to see what was going on. So they get to the telecast. They have a three-man booth in Orlando, George Savarikas, who has never called play-by-play for golf before in his life. And then you have Jim Gallagher Jr. and Billy Kratzer. These guys were planning to be doing Golf Central after the fact. They weren't planning to come in this early, they would do the pregame, and they weren't planning to be on the air for this four-hour stretch, basically, while the final round goes on. And then you have a bunch of people who are part of the Golf Channel crew who are non-union, the on-air talent, some other people. So you have some of them who are non-union who decided to come to work. The talent came to work. They're contractually obligated. They're employees. They're supposed to. So you had Whit Watson and Todd Lewis and a couple of analysts, but you also had Jerry Foltz, who was there to be an on-course reporter and interviewer. He decided he was going to step into one of the towers at 16 and check off a bucket list item and be a cameraman and try to contribute to the telecast that way. The end result was an over-reliance on blimp shots, over-reliance on overhead shots throughout the entire tournament, but specifically during the six-hole play. You know, the playoff was six holes. I mean, there was a reliance there, an over-reliance there, I should say, on that, because it was just easier to jump to that camera angle, even if you had a hard time seeing anything that was happening, than trying to race a cameraman with all the cables and all that stuff in a cart. He'd probably be driving himself and it's crazy. It was crazy. And I mean, all things considered, and I wrote something about this for GNM Plus members. I didn't think it was that bad, but I thought that the takeaway was we should be appreciative of what we get every week from PGA Tour broadcasts. There is a level of professionalism, a level of effort that we kind of take for granted, that we don't know what we've got until it's gone. And, you know, we can complain a lot. Don't get me wrong. There are definitely ways that we can improve golf telecasts, and we've talked about them at length. You can make coverage more accessible. You can cut out the garbage. Don't talk about the FedEx Cup. I know there's a sponsor activation, but talk about it less. Show more top tracer. You can give me more meaningful statistics. Don't describe what's going on. Tell me why it's happening. There's a lot of stuff that we've talked about over time about how to make golf telecasts better. But at a fundamental level, there needs to be a foundation of expectation that camera shots will be able to trace the ball, that they'll be in focus, that they won't be wobbly, that you can get the right angle at the right moment. And if you can't have that expectation, then everything else doesn't really matter. So I think that's something I took away from it, and that I've expressed that to other people who actually worked on the telecast, that I thank them for the effort that it took. And we can talk about whether they were crossing a picket line or not. They're non-union. The techs are union. Some of the camera people who were non-union or not that union came to work, but that some didn't. I don't understand the politics of it, so I can't weigh in on it. I don't know the sides. I just don't well enough. But I did appreciate the people who stepped into awkward situations to try to make a good telecast for you and me to watch golf, because they're proud of their work and they want to put a good product out there every week. And I'm sure that they all understand the negotiation between the IATSE union members from Golf Channel and Golf Channel, because they know what it's like to work in this business. It is hard to get a job. It's hard to keep a job. It's hard to make a living because you don't get paid that much because you're really a niche freak. Since Golf Channel got acquired by NBC Universal, a lot of things have changed in terms of how they're paid, how they're approached, how they're compensated for their time, and a lot of those people in that union have grown disgusted with that, so they want certain things. They want to be treated a certain way because they have a unique talent. I don't know. I can see both sides because I don't know one side better than the other. But the union called a strike for a reason, and it has not necessarily yielded a new contract. We don't have an announcement of a new contract. The strike continues. And from what I understand, it's actually gotten worse. It's gotten worse in part because there were a number of people on both those telecasts who have crossed the picket line and have gone back to work. Meanwhile, Golf Channel's president, Mike McCarley, is sending out emails to staffers going, "Oh, well, we're so happy they came back to work." I'm sure you are, but he's trying to bust up what is what is supposed to be a unity, a group of people in this union that are, they're connected, that they have a same common interest, and that they would all pursue the same common interest. But it's complicated. So where does that leave us for this week? So there's a mix of non-union and some union workers covering both tournaments this week, so or all three tournaments this week. So I guess technically the web.com tour event starts on Sunday, so it's a new week, but you get where I'm going. They're there now, working, getting ready. But if, you know, you have this week, it's probably going to look relatively seamless. It's starting to look more like you would expect a Golf Channel telecast to look. But there's still this ongoing union negotiation that appears to be in good faith from both sides right now. And there's also this stress that comes from people who are going back to work or who went back to work. So the people who chose to sit out and were hoping for unity, complete compliance with this strike call, they're not getting. I'm sure that's frustrating. I'm sure there's some infighting in that regard. And then you've got the reality that starting next week, the PGA Tour broadcasts through until March, basically, are, until we get to the Florida Swing and the Mexico Swing, are done by CBS. So from a logistical standpoint, CBS handles everything on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday behind the scenes. Now, Lance Barrow doesn't call all the shots on Thursday, Friday as the executive producer for CBS. That goes to the Golf Channel team. But CBS talent calls the action, interspersed with the Golf Channel talent. And CBS technical crews do the work. They're not IATSE. They're not in that union. So we don't know if there's going to be any kind of fallout from these employees that aren't in this union in some kind of form of solidarity or not. We don't know. We also don't know how many people are members of both that are a union member with Golf Channel and work for CBS and whatever representation they have. There is some crossover. Not a lot of people know that, but there is some crossover. So it'll be curious to see how that all shakes out, whether a deal is struck, when it's struck. But the longer this goes on, the more difficult it will be logistically for Golf Channel every week to account for when they're airing four tournaments a lot of weeks. And this is later in the year. I mean, right now, when we get to the LPGA Tour, other than the Bahamas tournament next week, once they start going to the winter portion Asian Swing, that's not handled by Golf Channel people. Their crews aren't doing it. So that's not going to be an issue. But once you get back stateside, then it becomes an issue. Web.com Tour is all Golf Channel. European Tour events are not. That's done by the Sky Sports crew. And then you have Mike Ritz, who's the host, who just kind of interjects here and there. And there's really not a whole lot in the way of Golf Channel legwork on that end, at least in the behind-the-scenes logistics on site. And then you have PGA Tour and PGA Tour Champions events. Obviously, as I mentioned, until NBC takes over in March for that swing, then you've got CBS for those, but you have Golf Channel for all the PGA Tour Champions events. So it's a weird mix, a lot of things going on, a lot of different people in charge of different things. It's a lot to handle. So we'll see what impact that might have on the coverage, on how it's presented, on how you get to take in golf as a fan. But I find that extremely interesting, and hopefully you did too. And hopefully this was somewhat instructive of what the hell's going on, because sometimes even I don't know what the hell's going on and have to ask somebody to figure out what it is that is happening, why it's happening. But I think we've got a decent handle on things, and ultimately, hopefully the people in this union, in the Golf Channel union, get the things they're looking for. A little bit better pay, some better health insurance. They're on COBRA right now. That's no fun for anybody. That they get compensation for when they have to skip lunch. That they get their, if they're not going to get compensated for lunch, that they get the two catered meals a day that they used to get back. That they get a little bit better working conditions. They get a little bit better treatment that they say they're not getting. So anyway, lots of things going on still, and none of it has been resolved, apparently. So it's turmoil somewhat in the background at Golf Channel. Meanwhile, they're 23 years in. They just celebrated their 23-year anniversary, and it'll be another, hopefully, good year of golf once this whole thing gets situated. All right, let's take a little break to tell you about Health IQ. We've been telling you about them so far through the start of 2018, and if you're not familiar with the first few episodes we've done this year, Health IQ uses science and data to secure lower rates on life insurance for health-conscious people like you. You may be a runner, cyclist, strength trainer, vegan, golfer who walks. You riders out there, you should be walking. But you can use Health IQ to get those discounts and save anywhere between 4 and 33% on your life insurance premiums. And that extension goes to, or that discount goes to 56% of Health IQ customers. And they can make these savings of up to 33% on these premiums because physically active people have a 56% lower risk of heart disease, a 20% lower risk of cancer, and a 58% lower risk of diabetes compared to people who are inactive. Health IQ works in a very similar way to how you shop for car insurance. If you are a good driver, have a good driving record, don't have a lot of tickets or other issues, crashes, for example, Health IQ can save you money for being a healthy person. Not a lot of crashes, not a lot of injuries, and you keep up your body and your fitness. That way, they save you money by leading a health-conscious lifestyle. 70% of the exclusive rates their Health IQ clients get are approved at the top rate class with top insurers. As I mentioned before, in a past life, early in college, I worked for health insurer John Hancock, and saw just scores of quotes go past my desk, ran lots of them with lots of different insurers. The healthier you are, the more money you can save. Health IQ helps augment that by finding you the best possible rates based on your health and your fitness because you live a health conscious and fitness first lifestyle. Head over to healthiq.com/19 to see if you qualify and to learn more. Again, one more time, healthiq.com/19, the number 19, to see if you qualify. All right, let's get back into the second half of the show. And I want to keep with the Sony Open in Hawaii a little bit, not necessarily to talk about all the shot-by-shot action or whatever happened with the telecast, segment one. Second part of the show, I wanted to talk about something more specific to what happened at the Sony Open. That was a six-hole playoff between Patton Kizzire and James Hahn. James Hahn got there with a final round 62, tied it up at 17 under par. Patton Kizzire got there too. Tom Hoagie should have gotten there, probably should have won the golf tournament, to be honest with you. Brian Harman probably should have gotten there, but didn't. He had a frustrating weekend. And I think that the thing that bothered me most, and I've talked about this in the past, so it's not new material necessarily. At least I've talked about it on Twitter. I don't know if I've talked about it on this podcast or not, but the one thing I cannot stand is when we have longer playoffs on the PGA Tour, or anywhere in golf for that matter, and they play the same hole again and again, and it's a non-differentiating hole. So 18 at Wailea Country Club is a par 5. It's reachable for everybody. It's like 510 yards. If you hit a drive in the fairway, if you hit a nice slinging draw over the bunker or a cut over the bunker and land in the fairway, you're looking at a long iron maybe into the hole, and you should be able to make birdie. That's just how, that's what a professional thinks they should be able to do. And I don't understand why you would play that hole twice before you went to the par 3 17th at Wailea, which was renovated. It's a Redan. It was renovated to play more like a Redan with some firming up so that if you didn't hit a good shot or you didn't hit the right shot, not a good shot, but the right shot, then you would go off the back or the side, and you would have an up and down from, you know, this past Palin type grass that's not easy to chip out of. It's not that, you know, can bury down. It might not be good. And that's ultimately where the tournament was decided, on that hole, the second time they got around to it. So they played 18, 18, 17, and then they went ahead and started that order again, 18, 18, 17. why not just start with the hole that's going to be a decider right away? I understand you want to give fans a chance to be able to watch it, and if you make certain holes the playoff hole, maybe it's awkward for TV. You want to make it as close as possible to the clubhouse, all that stuff. But if you want a playoff to be done quickly, you pick the most differentiating hole in the golf course, and you play that hole until someone wins. And usually that happens pretty quickly. But if you go to a par 5 or an easy par 4 or a reasonable par 3, you know, something that's not like 240 off the tee, it's unlikely you're going to get someone to make a, you know, there's not going to be a difference in score between two players. You're just going to make pars. I mean, a birdie's going to win, but probably going to make pars. And because it's a match play situation, you're not always looking for a birdie. It depends on what your opponent does. It's a different type of golf than stroke play a little bit. And you just have to, if you're the PGA Tour, you have to have the most differentiating hole as your first playoff hole. Get it over with. And I noticed this while watching all of those holes. And I'm sure the guys who are covering it, not only for Golf Channel in person, but in Orlando, was like, oh my God, can this end? Because first of all, it wasn't an interesting playoff. It was a lot of pars and a couple birdies for 12 holes, you know, 12 combined holes. Not good. Not entertaining golf. It would be one thing if it were, if it had been, you know, birdies on every hole and then a par finally won it or something along those lines. But it was just kind of pars, like pars that were okay and then missed birdie putts that should have gone in. Someone should have won at that point and didn't get that, which is just kind of frustrating if you're a golf fan. So I saw it from the numbers of people that were coming to our website. The people that were coming to our website would kind of go in these waves. Like there was an expectation around 6:30 on East Coast events, and then, you know, there was an expectation around 10 p.m., 10, 15 p.m. that this tournament would be over. And so people who might have seen part of it or who were interested and could see it, they show up waiting for us to deliver the results and a game story and all of those things. And they came, and the tournament wasn't resolved. And they went away, and they came back after what they figured would be the first playoff hole. And like, all right, well, maybe they're done. Nope, not done. And then kind of got less and less. By the time you got to the fifth playoff hole, people were just, they're done with it. I mean, they watched it, but they were like, all right, this could go on forever. Like, I'm not interested in the results anymore. This could go on forever. And then eventually on the sixth playoff hole, Kizire makes a lag putt par, and Han couldn't get up and down, and he's the winner. And they could have achieved that a whole lot sooner. I'm not saying that Pat and Kizire would have won had they done it this way, but they would have had a result a whole lot sooner if they just played 17 over and over again. At least that's a differentiating hole. It's a difficult hole. Redan is not designed to be an easy par 3. So I wish that they would have done that. And thank God it wasn't at least 18 every time, like they tried to do with the LPGA event last year in the Dallas area. I forget who was even in the playoff. Christy Kerr was in it, and I forget who the other player in the playoff was, but Christy Kerr didn't win. And they played this awful par 5 over and over, like strategically horrible. The ball bounced always toward like trees and water. It just was the worst hole in the world, and they kept insisting on playing it again and again until someone won. And then finally someone made, I think it was par that won. It was the worst, and people were starting to watch the playoff because of how bad it was. Not that the golf was bad, but the hole was so horrible that people were kind of watching because it started, again, kind of like the ratings were huge compared to last year for the Sony Open. They were up because it was a train wreck. People were expecting to watch a car crash with the coverage issues. So people caught wind of it and were like, oh, I'm going to watch this. This is going to be horrible TV. Let's do it. And, yeah, that, I don't know. So that same thing happened with the LPGA. And I think part of the reason people might have even stayed with this at all was just, all right, this is so ridiculous with all the blimp shots and the bad audio and all that stuff. I'm going to watch this thing. I'm going to see this thing through because I might not see anything like that again. Not that I don't get to see a six-man or a six-hole playoff all that often. I think the previous one had been John Huh versus, was it Robert Allenby at Mayakoba, which was also a bad playoff, but one that consisted of six holes. And I don't know. I just think that if you get into a situation at the PGA Tour or any professional golf tournament where you get a 72-hole tie, you want it solved as quickly as possible, unless it's for a major championship. And even then, I actually kind of understand sudden death, but we have come to this conclusion at golf that if it's an important enough championship, it should be an aggregate playoff, three holes or four holes or 18 holes for the U.S. Open, whatever. But I think for the PGA Tour for week to week and their affiliate tours and the LPGA Tour, all that stuff, it should be sudden death, and it should be, again, on a hole where maybe it's the hardest hole in the course, but it's got to be the hole that you don't expect to see a whole lot of the same score, because otherwise it's just going to drown on and people are going to get bored, and then the potential impact for that player of having a maximum audience see them win, it goes away. It's lessened. And I don't think that those players deserve that. I really don't. I think they worked really hard all week. They got themselves in a position. Now, these guys have won before, and Patton had won earlier in the season, but those guys deserve kind of the right stage to be able to culminate a win, and they didn't get it. I just think that's kind of lousy. I don't know what you think about it. I don't know if you even pay attention to the playoff holes they play over and over again, but as someone who kind of watches golf course architecture and golf course strategy, as much as I watch the actual golf shots being played, I find it more rewarding when you're playing a strategic hole where anything can happen. And you can't go on the other extreme. I never liked when 17 was the first playoff hole for the Players' Championship. That's a stroke of luck sometimes with wind. So all of a sudden, you're leaving the out, and that's why they went to a three-hole aggregate. You're leaving a huge check, a life-changing amount of money, and a life-changing series of exemptions that comes with winning that tournament, or any PGA Tour event, to chance because the wind could flare up, push them all in the water, and the thing's over. And that doesn't work either. So you have to have a fair hole that is a differentiator. You can't just have a gimmick hole where something dumb happens and all of a sudden the tournament's over. You need to be decided with golf, but not by hazards. But you can't just have something that's also so plain and mundane, architecturally speaking, competitively speaking, that you could just have all these same scores forever. It just doesn't work. Anyway, hopefully we don't have a playoff this week. Hopefully the Career Builder Challenge leads to an interesting conclusion on the stadium course. That is a differentiating golf course. The finish, curiously enough, since we were talking about the players, is a lot like the finish at TPC Sawgrass by design. It was a sequel, the West Coast sequel, to the stadium course. It's a good event. Lagardère Unlimited getting involved, running the tournament, is huge. Helps Phil Mickelson. He's one of their clients. Gets John Rahm there, also one of their clients. Some other guys who are in their stable come to play that tournament. It's going to be really helpful in the long run to have them there. And you get, like I said, a really good test, a really interesting golf course from the Pete Dye design at the stadium course. And you get two courses you can absolutely destroy in La Quinta Country Club and the State and Nicholas Tournament course at PGA West. So low scores, but at least the final round will require these guys who make the 54-hole cut to hit shots and play a uncomfortable brand of golf, which is playing any kind of Pete Dye golf course. We'll talk about that next week on the show, results from that. We'll talk about the Abu Dhabi HSBC Championship, which is ongoing in primetime over the last couple of days, and it'll wrap up on Sunday. A lot of great stuff this week in golf, and we're starting to kind of see that bloom out now back into the full return of professional golf. And there's a lot to watch, a lot to pay attention to. Next week, we're going to be at the PGA Merchandise Show in Orlando, so we'll try to do a show, at least one show, hopefully two. Maybe we can actually do interview shows for those broadcasts, but we'll stay tuned on that, and hopefully we nail some good guests down for you, because the Orlando show is, there's a lot of frustration about it, but there are also some really cool things that happen there. and hopefully we can kind of chronicle some of that in a few interviews for the show. If you listen to us through iTunes, please give us a 5-star review. It really helps us reach more people. All you got to do is go to our show page, search the 19th Hole Golf Show in your app, your podcast app or your iTunes app, whatever generation of iOS you're on, and just leave us a 5-star review. It's, again, tremendously helpful. And if you have feedback on the show, email me, ryan@thegolfnewsnet.com. Be sure to join GNN Plus. Head over to thegolfnewsnet.com/GNN-plus to find out more. $10 a year, original content, save a lot of money, and you also get to support an independent media company like ours. And last but not least, be sure to head over to thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam. We're having our first ever GNN trip this August to the Myrtle Beach World Amateur Handicap Championship. I love going down there. I would be down there anyway. I go down there twice a year. We get to play 4 competitive rounds of golf, maybe a 5th if you score well enough, a pre-tournament round, get the access to the world's largest 19th hole with open bar, heavy hors d'oeuvres, a great gift bag worth more than $300 worth of stuff, 7 nights accommodations, hang out with me and Mitch Lawrence in his hometown of Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. It's going to be a lot of fun, and it's under $1,200. It is an incredible bargain. So head over to thegolfnewsnet.com/worldam to find out more. Or you can hit me up on Twitter @RyanBalanji if you have more questions. All right, until next week, I'm Ryan Balanji saying thanks for listening. We'll see you next time on the 19th Hole Golf Show.